Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
The Planet Fitness Black Card is packed with perks, not like other gyms.
Hi, can I bring a friend to work out? Oh, okay. Is my membership good at other locations? Okay, do you have any other amenities?
But at Planet Fitness, the PF Black Card gets you tons of perks. Bring a friend for free anytime. Access to any of our 2,500 plus locations. Relax in the hydro massage and so much more. Join for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 15th. See Home Club for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show, only in the new Chosen app. Download the Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
Montgomery County, Maryland is where businesses go to be next. Home to a highly skilled, diverse workforce, a thriving business community, competitive incentives, and more. MoCo will help transform your business. Visit BeNext.ThinkMoCo.com to see how we can help you be next.
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 74 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We will be continuing our Dynasty and Prospect Rankings episodes with the first base position today. And with me, as usual, my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how was your Christmas, bud?
It was good. I spent time with family. First Christmas with a kid, so that was fun. You know, he enjoyed eating wrapping paper and tissue paper out of bags, so that was fun. Probably enjoyed that more than his toys, but
I'm sure.
Yeah, it was cool. It was fun to have that feeling, that Christmas feeling back that hadn't had since I was a kid. So you get to do that a little more with when you have kids and see their joy from it. So yeah, certainly a good day. Hope your Christmas went well as well.
It did. It was pretty low key, which is surprising. Well, because given all the places I usually have to go to, you know, my mom's, my dad's, you know, grandparents, aunts, uncles, etc. But it was good. But low key, I love that phase of the put everything in your mouth phase with the babies, which obviously that could have its downfalls because you want to put in the wrong things in their mouth.
But right.
It's funny. They're just like, oh, eat everything. How does this taste? Yeah. I saw that picture you posted above Hayden eating the tissue paper. So I'm like, yep, I remember that phase with my kids.
He eats everything. So he finds the littlest specks of grass like the dogs bring in from outside, and he like picks those up and eats. I don't know how he finds them. Literally finds everything. It's ridiculous.
helps that he's lower to the ground, so he can see those things that, like, you know, us taller adults can't see.
Yeah,
he'll pick it all up. But yeah, this is our second to last episode of 2021. We got one more on Thursday that'll come out, our second base dynasty and prospect rankings, but and then we'll get into 2022. So finishing up the year strong. We have a really fun episode today, but before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at Roto Clegg. I am at AirCross04, and our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/Fantrax Toolshed, for extra content from both of us, including something Chris just put out. He's working on his Dynasty Points rankings. That's a fun little thing to go check out there. And, of course, check out all the other great written and audio work we have on the Fantrax HQ network, including our other podcasts, SB Streamer, Fantasy Hockey Life, Fantasy Football Addicts, Define Fantasy Football, and Fantasy Football POV. And fantasy football is coming to an end here. I think everyone's in their championship weeks this week. So baseball will be in full swing. I know it already has been for us. I've now gotten into a few drafts here, a couple best balls and some NFBC DC. So fully in draft season already here in late December. It's a lot of fun. And this episode is going to be a lot of fun as well, as I mentioned. So let's get right into it with our first base dynasty rankings here. Let's start with our personal top 10s. Chris, who's your top 10 at this position?
All right, you want to go 10 to 1?
I don't. That's just if you want to.
Okay, well, we'll go 10 to 1. How about that? All right, number 10, got Alex Kirilloff. Number 9, I've got Tristan Casas. 8, Max Muncy. 7, Chris Bryant. 6, Andrew Vaughn. And the top 5 of Spencer Torkelson, Pete Alonso, Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson, and Vlad Guerrero Jr. So you can tell that I still like these young guys above a lot of the actual vets that are playing in the MLB. They're in the top 4 here. So hoping a lot of these prospects break through soon. But yeah, who is your top 10?
Yeah, I hope so, because it's getting kind of this position is not as great as it used to be. Definitely a lot of question mark, more questions than answers. And there are some good young players and some good prospects, but even at the prospect level, it's not great. Like, I think catcher might have even been more intriguing than first base when it comes to from a prospect perspective. So, but for me, I have Max Muncy at 10. So hard to figure out where to rank him right now. We'll talk about him in a little bit. Alex Kirilloff at 9, Chris Bryant at 8, Jose Abreu 7, Paul Goldschmidt 6, Spencer Torkelson 5, Pete Alonso 4, Matt Olson 3, Freddie Freeman 2, and of course Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at number 1. I think the top 3 is probably pretty universal at this point in both, yeah, you know, 1, 2, and 3. So I think no surprises there. Let's start with talking some about the older guys that we have in this range here. Those being Freddie Freeman, Paul Goldschmidt, and Jose Abreu. All those guys are in their 30s now. So it's kind of, you start to wonder. I don't think any of them are about to fall off a cliff production-wise or anything like that. But you got to wonder, Chris, how much longer can we expect these guys to kind of perform at the level they're currently at?
Yeah, certainly interesting conversation, and it's worth discussing from a dynasty standpoint, because these are all viable players that have probably been on winning teams over the last several years. But when you look at all of them, and you just have to wonder, like, when does Father Time catch up to them? And I think that's the million-dollar question that we all wish that we could answer there. Is if we could answer these questions, we could sell at the right time, obviously, and be able to more appropriately get the right value. Because any of these guys are prone to fall off. I mean, Joey Votto coming off a stellar year last year, which was kind of out of the blue, but at the same time, he's 38 years old. So could he just fall right off again? Yeah, it's highly possible, because he had slumped and he wasn't the same player. But then when he hit 36 home runs last year, and he just looked like the old Joey Votto again, minus like hitting 320, but still had a highly productive year.
For sure. Like, there's no question there. I'm right there with you. And, you know, unless you're like, if you know, like, all right, you're definitely going to be a contender, top 2 or 3 team, I'd probably hold on to him there. But if you're like kind of hesitant, like, well, what, maybe I'll be mid pack. Okay. You don't need him. Obviously, if rebuilding, you don't need him. So unless you're going to be a team that is definitely in championship contention in your dynasty league, Votto is definitely a good trade chip for you to get rid of. And yeah, as for the other 3, Freeman, Goldie, and Abreu, you know, Goldie and Abreu a little bit older. But yeah, I think Freeman is going to be one of those guys that ages gracefully. I really do. Like, you see, he's a really good frame. Like, I don't think he's, there's no like weight issues. Freddie Freeman, he's still very, very strong, very athletic. I don't see him falling off anytime soon, even as he gets into his mid-30s here in a couple of years. So I think in terms of him being like a top 25 or top 30 guy, I think we still got a couple more years of that. You know, obviously the contact skills, the power, it's all still there. Doesn't obviously doesn't rely on speed as part of his profile. So even though he can chip in a little bit, but even if he goes down to like zero or only one or two steals, then go still have the average, the four category, you know, greatness to keep him up at that range. So I still think he'll be like number two, number three at this position for the next handful of years. And then maybe he starts trickling down into that range where Goldie and Abreu are now in that kind of a second tier or maybe third tier if you want to put Vladdy in his own tier, but into that kind of tier of like, he'll be like a top 50 to 80 guy for the next handful of years. Then he'll start falling off even more as he gets to his late 30s. But yeah, he's not one where I'd be looking to sell anytime soon. So I don't think he's going to have you know, a decline in the near future. Goldie and Abreu, I think we've already started to see a little bit of each of their declines. Goldie had that nice bounce back last year. Abreu has just been super consistent, had the one down year, but he's really just been super consistent, you know, 280, 30 type of guy, give or take. So I think we still got a few more years of Goldie and Abreu as being, you know, top 100 guys before they start falling off. But yeah, Votto's the one. Yeah, you can definitely, if you're not contending, it's a good time to sell on him. But moving on here to Max Muncy, Chris, what the heck are we doing with Max Muncy right now? Like, with the elbow injury that's still kind of up in the air, when's he going to be back? Is he going to be ready for opening day? Will he miss a sizable chunk of time? He's one where, you know, obviously it's ranking season here in terms of redraft and dynasty. He was easily at this position. Obviously, and he plays multiple positions, but for first baseman, he was the hardest one for me to rank, both in my redraft rankings, which are out today, by the way. Go check out those out at fantraxhq.com. But also here in Dynasty, where he was kind of in this kind of big range by himself. Kirilloff was near him, but there was a big drop between him and then like the Bellinger, you know, those types of guys. So I still have him in the same spot within this position as I had him, you know, before the injury concerns popped up. But he has dropped a good 20, 25 spots overall, but it's so hard because we don't know like how significant this injury is going to be, how long is it going to keep him out. So how are you kind of dealing with Muncy right now in your rankings?
Yeah, it's tough. Redraft is obviously a little tougher than Dynasty because, you know, redraft focuses on just the immediate future. So, you know, I mean, typically hitters do come back a lot quicker from this. It's not like he has to come out and pitch, so he doesn't have to worry about it, his arm as much. But still, if he has a torn UCL, like, that's a pretty big deal. And it was like, he just kind of sprung that upon everybody when he kind of said that in an interview about how he was recovering.
Like nonchalantly disrupted, like, oh yeah, by the way, I have a torn UCL.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the injury looked bad when it happened, but we didn't know. And then he just pops it on everybody. So who knows? Like, we don't know his time frame. I mean, the last report I've seen is that he's healing, quote, slowly. It's a slow progress. So obviously he doesn't plan to have surgery on it. Like, so he's going to try to play through it. And he definitely can. Like, if he just plays first base only, then, you know, he's not going to be throwing it too much. So it's possible that he could play through it, but I don't know the effects of that on a hitter. Like, I still feel like that you kind of need a UCL to hit and swing a bat, right?
Right.
It seems pretty important. So he's going the rest and rehab route. We'll kind of see how that goes. I just really don't know when to expect him back. And so for redraft, it's super hard to rank. So from a dynasty standpoint, it's kind of a wait and see. I don't think you're going to get the appropriate value if you do try to trade him, just because people are concerned, unless you find an owner that's not concerned. In that case, you definitely flip him. He's coming off a 36 home run season, had a near 370 OBP. He's not going to post high averages, but still hit, you know, near 250. I don't know. Kind of just holding in and seeing where this goes, honestly.
Yeah, you kind of have to. And it sucks because this is a guy that, you know, he had a really down 2020 in terms of the batting average, still had some solid power there. But look at his last three full seasons, 2018, 2019, 2021, were very similar seasons overall. 35, 36 home runs. Had over 90 RBI each of the last 2 years, over 95 runs each of the last two full years. You mentioned like the average is always like around 250, give or take, but really strong OBPs thanks to his higher walk rate. So, yeah, this has been kind of sneakily. Is that a word, sneakily?
If it's we'll not, count it.
If it's not, I'm making it a word. probably isn't, but he's been really sneaky good over the last handful of years and pretty underrated, too. I think he definitely deserves more love than he has. But, yeah, right now it's you kind of got to hold and wait and see. If you can get a good return for him now, I wouldn't be opposed to trading him. Someone's not quite as worried about the elbow, but, you know, he's got to kind of hold him. If you can get any good offers, I'd definitely hold. I wouldn't sell low on him because he might be fine. We might be overblowing this, I should say. But, yes, the talent's still there, and he's only going to be 31 next season. It's not like he's like 34, 35 or anything like that. He just turned 31 end of August, so he'll be 31 for most of next season. So still young enough to have a handful of more really productive years. And the Dodgers, they don't need to rush him either. Like with all the options they have to play first or second, they don't really need to rush him. So I think my best guess, which is just a guess, no, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but maybe we can talk with Nick Savali about this, but my guess is maybe he misses the first month, comes back in May, just keep the kind of slow play it and let him get fully healthy. Maybe he misses the month of the season, but who knows? Just something to keep an eye on for sure throughout the rest of the offseason. Getting into the next set of our rankings here. Let's go rankings 11 through 25. Who you got, Chris?
All right. You know, start at 11 or 25? Start
at 11. Let's go 11 now. Right. I think going 25 to 11 is kind of weird at that point.
Yeah, that is strange. All right. Number 11, we've got Paul Goldschmidt. 12, Jake Cronenworth. 13, Jared Walsh. Jose Abreu. Ryan Mountcastle. Then 16 through 20, I have Rhys Hoskins, Josh Bell, DJ LeMahieu, Trey Mancini, and Anthony Rizzo in the 20 spot. And then 21 through 25, I have Nick Prado, Nate Lowe, Ty France, Miguel Vargas, and CJ Cron rounding out the 25th spot.
Man, so you have Abreu and Goldie quite a bit lower than I do. So I have Goldie 6, Abreu 7. And where did you have them?
Goldie at 11, Abreu at 14.
Why is that, Chris? Is it just because they're, you're kind of dropping their value a bit because they're getting to the mid-30s now?
Yeah, I think it's a age thing. And, in reality, that's like a big tier for me at that point. Like, they're not really that low. They're, let me pull up overall. Goldschmidt, I have at 117 overall. And then Abreu at 130 overall. So it's kind of just a tier there of these guys. So, yeah, it's just a little cluster, but I guess could be low. But again, like, I just think that the decline could be coming. So I think that, like, the ranking kind of signifies, like, I think they're a good sell, in my opinion.
Yeah, it could be. And again, kind of that similar situation. If you're not a contender, if your team is going through a rebuild, it might be a good time to sell those two. Because, yeah, well, I still think they could have a couple more good years. Like, Goldschmidt's 34 right now. Abreu, I want to say, is 35. I can't seem to find his age on my sheet. I can't find him at all on my sheet. Where did I put him? Is he 35, Chris?
Who, Abreu?
Yeah.
He is. He's about to be. He will be.
Oh, there you, okay, yeah, almost 35. So, yeah, there's still a couple more good years left than those two. But, yeah, if you're going into a rebuild and you seem like you're falling out of championship contention, have one of these two guys on your team, yeah, I could definitely see selling high there. My 11 through 25, I have Cody Bellinger, Jake Cronenworth, Andrew Vaughn, Ryan Mountcastle, Jared Walsh, Trey Mancini, DJ LeMahieu, Tristan Casas, CJ Cron, and Rhys Hoskins at 20, and then Josh Bell, who I can't seem to rank correctly ever or find a good spot for him. I don't like Josh Bell that much, but he is intriguing this year, especially if he's going to continue to hit right behind Juan Soto. Could be a lot of RBI there. Then Ryan McMahon, Frankie Schwindel, Bobby Dalbec, and Anthony Rizzo rounding up my top 25. Rizzo was hard to rank, Chris. I think we both kind of we saw where we had him, didn't like it, moved him down a little bit. But you see there, he's another one of those guys that kind of – there's a lot of guys that are like – used to be really good. Now they're like in that aging mid-30s range. Do you think he can kind of bounce back and have another couple of good solid years?
Maybe, but the trajectory is not good at all. So that's kind of a concern.
He's still walking a ton, but outside of that, it's like it's a very bland profile now.
Yeah, it's just there's nothing special about it. And I have Dalbec in the next spot after Rizzo, and I don't really see why. Like, I feel like Dalbec should be over him, honestly. So who knows? Like, there's a lot of guys I'm just looking at. I'm like, where do you rank him? I don't really know. I have him just barely inside the top 200, but is he closer to 250? I don't really know. It's tough.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I think I just moved them outside my top 200. I still have them in my top 250, but outside my top 200 now. But yeah, like this is a cluster. Like something I was mentioning before the show, like there's not really a huge difference between, like, I don't know, I have Trey Mancini at 16 and Bobby Dahlbeck at 24. Like, I don't think there's a big difference there. I think they could be pretty similar long term. So it's just like a big cluster of players, none of which like really stick out to me. Obviously, Tristan Casas obviously is a prospect. We'll get into prospects after the break, but I don't know. You're a bit higher on Josh Bell than I am. I don't know. I just, there's a lot of guys here that I'm just not really intrigued by. After really Vaughn at 13, it drops off. Like, I'm not a huge Ryan Mountcastle guy. He's solid, but I won't ever want Ryan Mountcastle as my starting first baseman. Walsh is good now, but who knows how long he can keep this up. Mancini, solid, but again, not a guy I'd want as my starter. LeMahieu was obviously starting to fall off, and maybe those kind of two big years were the two best we'll see moving forward. But yeah, really interesting range of players. But let's talk about a few of them here. Let's start with Andrew Vaughn here, because this is a guy that was a top 10 prospect for most people, or at least top 15 or so. It was regarded for his hit tool and his power and his polish at the plate. And then that kind of went, you know, downhill. Obviously, La Russa didn't do any favors, bumping him all around, moving him to outfield. Obviously, they have Abreu at first, so he kind of had to, but also play him a little bit second and third. It was just really weird how they handled him, but the overall line was very unimpressive. 235, 309, 396, 15 home runs, 48 RBI, 56 runs scored in 127 games, 469 plate appearances. Are you still buying Vaughn as a potential top 10 option at this position, Chris? Or do you think the long-term outlook for him is dulled a little bit?
No, I'm still all in. I'm sixth in the position. I think if you look at the basic stat line, I think it's easy to be discouraged, but you mentioned some of the factors. I mean, he got jerked around. He had to learn a new position on the fly. Like, he played second base. Like, what the heck's going on there? But he's not an outfielder, not comfortable in that spot at all. And you mentioned the stat line, pretty underwhelming, but there's some good things under the hood. I mean, at 90% zone contact rate, that's 6% higher than league average. I mean, 90% zone contact is really good. 78% contact above league average as well. The swinging strike rate at 10%, that's really good. Those are things I like to see. So he kind of had some bad luck go his way, actually. He had a really high called strike percentage, and it wasn't from the lack of swinging. I mean, his swing rate was a little below league average, but not bad overall. Wasn't chasing a ton. So, you know, under the hood, there's some decent-looking things where I think that Vaughn's still going to be a really solid option. He's been basically completely written off. And again, we have to remember that this is a player that did not play a game above high A before making his major league debut last year, because the 2020 season was so weird. Yeah, he got reps at the alt site, but how much does that really matter? It's hard to say for sure. And again, you can even look at Vaughn's 2019 season. It wasn't great at low A and high A by any means. But he hits the ball hard. He makes good contact. I'm buying back in. I think that he's going to be solid. I think that he's going to be a great average and power hitter, and we're going to see that really blossom. Maybe not fully this year, But again, he's just 23 years old. He'll be 24 at the beginning of next season. So there's still plenty of time for him to develop. And I fully believe that once he gets comfortable, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you just said. And I kind of, I'll take a little bit of the middle road here where I'm definitely still buying in. I'm still very much in on Vaughn. You mentioned that a lot of under the hood metrics here still point in his direction, like 10.9% barrel rate, 91.1 average xFIP low, 115 max xFIP low, which was top 6% of the league. You know, the X slug was 432, which was higher than his actual slug of 396, 47.3% hard hit rate, and still had a pretty solid approach. You know, you would think with his struggles that you'd have a, you know, the approach wasn't as good as it was, but 8.7% walk rate, which is right around league average, maybe slightly above, and then 21.5% K rate, which is slightly below league average, meaning better. So still a lot of good, you know, good metrics here that really get you excited. But at the same time, maybe he's, as you mentioned, even in the minors, he wasn't quite putting up the numbers that we kind of expected. And obviously numbers aren't everything with prospects. We know that, but maybe he's not quite as high as maybe at one point I thought he was like a 290-30 guy. Maybe he's more like 275-25. So still obviously pretty good, but I think he's more maybe going to be a back end top 10 guy at this position as opposed to a guy that I thought could be a top five position at this position. And he still could be top five. I'm not ruling that out, but he's going to have to get to 290-30. Or better if he wants to get top five at this position. Because as we know, he brings zero speed to the table. He's, you know, only had one steal. He's not going to be a guy that brings any speed. So needs to, you know, really produce in those other four categories. So I still think he can, but maybe not quite as high on him as I used to be. But still definitely 100% buying back in as a buy low. If you can get him for 80 cents on the dollar in your dynasty leagues, I would highly recommend doing so. Let's move on here to another youngster that had, actually, he's not really a youngster anymore. I kind of get thrown because he was a quote unquote like rookie last year. Or did he still have rookie eligibility? Or
I think he did. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he exhausted it last year.
Regardless, it was his first full season here, 2021. He only had 15 plate appearances with KC back in 2019. But Frankie Schwindel, Frank the Tank, Frankie Fix, whatever you want to call him here. A lot of good names with Frank Schwindel. And let's look at his profile picture. It's just like, he looks like a really goofy dude. Like, this looks like a dude you want to go out and have a beer with. Like, this looks like a fun dude. But as a 28/29-year-old last year, got a lot of run in the second half after the Cubs had their fire sale, got rid of, you know, their two corner guys, Rizzo and Bryant, which opened up time for both Schwindel and Patrick Wisdom to get some time. And one of them, well, Wisdom hit for a lot of power, but had like a 9,000% K rate. Schwindel, though, on the other hand, was one of the top hitters in baseball in the second half of the year. And 259 plate appearances, slash 326, 371, 591, 20 doubles, 14 home runs, 43 RBI, and 44 runs scored in those 259 plate appearances. Like I said, it was like, In the National League, it was obviously you got Soto and Harper that went berserk in the second half. And then you could make a case that Schwindel was like a top five hitter in the National League in the second half with what he did for the Cubs, which begs the question now, are we buying into that? Obviously, I don't think we're any of us are buying into Schwindel as a 326 hitter, but you look at what he did in the minor leagues, I don't think this was 100% a fluke. Is he going to be top 10 at the position? Probably not. But can he be a solid corner infielder for your dynasty team? I think he definitely can. Like, I think there's a chance that he could continue to hit for a pretty good average, maybe 270, 280, 20 to 25 home runs, maybe a little bit more, you know, in that mid-20 range. He's going to get a lot of run here, at least this year. And who knows if he's in their long-term plans, but if he continues to hit, I think he could be in their long-term plans as their starting first baseman moving forward. So I'm like mostly buying into Schwindel. What are your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, you talk about a guy that Steamer really loves. I mean, Steamer projects him to hit 270 with 27 home runs, 81 runs, 75 RBI. Like, that's highly productive at a corner infield spot. So, you know, maybe I'm too low on him. I have him like 33rd right now, but maybe I need to bump him up. I mean, just looking at it, like, would I rather have Schwindel or Brandon Belt in Dynasty?
I mean, I would if Bell could stay healthy, but I'll take Schwindel. I have Schwindel 23rd at the position.
Yeah, there's a big age gap between Belt and Schwindel.
I can make a strong case that I can move him up as high as 16, where I have Trey Mancini, because Mancini's like a 270, 25 type, and I think Schwindel could be that. So I can make a case for putting him up in the mid-teens.
And they're similar age, honestly, so that obviously matters too. I mean, Rizzo, like, is he going to be better than Anthony Rizzo? Probably so. Like, I really think he's going to be better than Rizzo next year. Just going down the list, I mean, like, Nate Lowe, could be similar. CJ Cron, I don't know. I like Cron for next year in Colorado, but, man, just going looking at these names, like, I really need to bump Schwindel up a lot, because I think that he is legit. And you even look, I mean, he performed in AAA last year. He was really good. He's performed in the past, and he's just like a journeyman. He's bounced around everywhere. Was with the Royals for 5 years, actually. Then with Detroit, back to Kansas City, then Chicago or Oakland, then Chicago. So yeah, he's been pretty much everywhere. So I don't know. I'm a little low, I think. So I'm gonna bump him up right now. Let's see.
We got a live ranking,
a live ranking update. Yep. Hey, if you're a member of the 70 grade tier of our Patreon, you can get this all the time, because I update it pretty much every day. So we're doing this on air. You can see it on the spreadsheet. Oh, I don't know where to bump them though. I'm gonna bump them to 24th right now and say that I could even go a little higher on them. So I'm gonna go 24th, just ahead of Miguel Vargas and just behind Ty France.
That is certainly fair. Yeah, I've said I have Frank Schwindel 23rd, so I'm definitely a believer. I said I might bump him up even more. Like, by the time I post my update, top 500 update on Fantrax HQ next Monday, so the 3rd of January, he could very well be inside my top 20 at this position. So I like Frank Schwindel a lot. I think he's going to be a really solid player this year and long term, moving at least next few years. I think he'll be pretty good. Moving on here, before we get into the prospect section after the break, let's go the rest of our top 40 here, and then we'll each give you a MLB player at this position that we think could break out in 2021. All right, so Chris, let's just do it all at once. So give us your 26 through 40 and that breakout.
All right, so now 26 is CJ Cron, who I did have at 25 before, Bobby Dalbec, Eduardo Escobar, Jesus Aguilar. Escobar Aguilar, that was a tongue twister. I don't know why. Luke Voit, Joey Votto, Brandon Belt, Dustin Harris, Miguel Sano, Dominic Smith, who, gosh, I don't even know if he deserves to be there. Curtis Meade, Tyler Stevenson, Mike Moustakas, don't know if he deserves to be there. Rowdy Tellez and Pavin Smith, round now 40.
And who's that breakout for you, Chris?
I'm going with Ty France, who I think just has all the signs of being a huge breakout. I think he's going to be the everyday first baseman in Seattle. He showed us a little bit last year. I mean, did hit 18 home runs, hit 291. All the potential's there, and I think the power's even more so there than we realize. I think that he's going to be like a 25-plus home run bat. I think the hit tool is really solid. I mean, he's done nothing but hit throughout the major. I mean, he's a career 281 hitter, so all the signs are there of him being – every bit legit, and I think he's still being undervalued, but I think we're really going to see the power breakout this year, which is going to really vault him up rankings.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I like Ty France a good amount too. I think Seattle's going to be really intriguing this year. A lot of intriguing bats on Seattle, so I think they definitely could surprise again as a potential playoff team. We'll see how the pitching goes. For me here, to get my correct spreadsheet back up, 26, I have Ty France, 27, Nate Lowe, 28, Nick Prado, 29, Brandon Belt, who could be in that Walsh Mancini level if he could actually stay healthy, though he is getting older now. It's maybe a little bit lower than that. The Belt's at 29 for it now. Miguel Vargas, 30. Miguel Sano, 31. Dustin Harris, 32. Rest of the top 40, Jeanquenzie Noel, Luke Voit, Yuli Gurriel, who, I know, he's still pretty good right now, but he's older, so I still keep him in there. Rowdy Tellez, 36. Vinny Pasquantino, 37. Juan Yepez, 38. Dominic Smith, 39. And Joey Votto at 40. A couple guys I probably could have bumped ahead of Votto. Right after him are Blaze Jordan and Jesus Aguilar. Probably should have bumped Aguilar up, but I like Votto. I'll keep him at 40 for now. And my breakout is Rowdy Tellez. You know, Russell Resource currently has him in a platoon for 2022, but with Mike Brousseau, I don't see Brousseau. Like, Brousseau is not a starter. He's a solid bench bat that can move around, play multiple spots on the infield, even some outfield. So I think they'll use him in that role. So I think Tellez will be at least get 500 plus plate appearances in this year for sure. And even though the surface stats, you know, 242, 305, 414, 11 home runs and 325 plate appearances don't really, you know, wow you at all. But you look at the just under the hood metrics here, and each of the last every year of his career, I know it's been kind of fluctuant playing time, but the barrel rate has been above 11.5% in three of those years. Average exit velo above 90.5 miles an hour each of the last 3 years. Max exit velo above 114 each of the last 3 years. Hard hit rate above 40% every year. Doesn't walk a ton, but slightly below average walk rate, but doesn't strike out that much either. Last 2 years, 15.7% and 20%. Hard hit rate last 2 years, 45.3, 48.1. X slug, 490, 468. I think there's a good chance that Tellez could be, I don't think that'll be top 10, maybe not even top 15 at this position, but I think he could be a top 20 guy that does, you know, 270, 25 home runs or so. He's for right now, because a lot of Milwaukee's kind of top prospects are a little bit away, he's going to have a chance to bat somewhere in the middle of the order. They have him batting cleanup now. I don't think he'll bat cleanup exclusively, but he's at least going to be in the top two-thirds of that order. So good amount of RBI potential there with Tellez as well. Could be like 80 to 90 RBI guy. That's a really solid four-category guy. Obviously, he won't bring any speed. He's a big dude, 6'4", 255. They like them big dudes up there in Milwaukee, like Vogelbach and Rowdy Tellez and all of them. But I think he could be a really solid four-category guy for sure. So I'm buying all the shares of Tellez like Kings. I think this could be the year that he really takes off in rankings. Let's go ahead and take a quick break here. We'll come back on the other side and get into our prospect rankings. Don't go anywhere.
We'll be back with more Fantrax Toolshed right after this.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
All right, welcome back from the break. Let's get into the prospect side of this position now. We'll start with our personal top 10 prospect rankings at the first base position. I'll start here, 10 to 1. At 10, I have Blaze Jordan. 9, Juan Yepez. 8, see, Juan Yepez is a name that just tongue twists me and finger twists me. Right. I was telling Chris, every time I type Juan Yepez, I'd say 80%+ of the time I type Juan Y-U-A-N because of the Y in Yepez. So his name just gives me all sorts of fits, both in terms of typing and speaking. So yeah, Blaze Jordan 10, Juan Yepez 9, Vinny Pasquantino 8, Curtis Meade 7, Dustin Harris 6, Nick Prado 5, Young Kenzie Noel 4, Miguel Vargas 3, Tristan Cassis 2, and Spencer Torkelson 1. And if we were including Tyler Soderstrom, I'd have him. I have him one spot ahead of Cassis in my overall, which I think Soderstrom could end up at first base long term. So always factor that in. But Chris, who are your top 10 here?
All right. Number 10 is Jonathan Aranda. 9, Juan Yepez. 8, Blaze Jordan. 7, Curtis Meade. 6, Dustin Harris. 5, Miguel Vargas. 4, Nick Prado. 3, John Kinsey Noel. 2, Tristan Casas. And 1, Spencer Torkelson. And if we include Soderstrom, he would be third behind, right behind Casas, not far behind, but do prefer Casas there.
Yeah, I might. It's called, I go back and forth who I like more, Soderstrom or Casas. I will say, though,
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I don't like Oakland's farm system. I don't like how they develop prospects both on both sides of the ball. They used to be very good. Like they developed Mark Mulder and Barry Zito and all them. But lately it's like the pitching prospects have not panned out. All their hitting prospects have incredibly high K rates. Like Lazaro Armenteros, Austin Beck. It's just it hasn't panned out lately for them. So not a big fan of the fact that he's in Oakland. I would love him a lot more if he was in really most 25 other orgs that I like a lot more. So am worried about that, but do love me some Tyler Soderstrom. That's for sure. Let's start at the top with Spencer Torkelson here. You know, we both have him well inside our top 100 overall. I think we both, where did you have him at this position? You had him fifth?
Yes, fifth.
Okay, so we both have him fifth. So he's already there. But can he get to that next level? We kind of talked about him in our Detroit Patreon episode last week, but do we think that Tork can get up into that top three, be like a super elite option? Or, Chris, are you feeling more like this is kind of where he's going to be, like right around Pete Alonso, that in that kind of same like 270, 260, 270 bat, 30-plus home runs, so he kind of sticks around top 50 overall? Or do you think there's that next level for Tork?
Yeah, I think that he probably hangs out around this spot. It's going to be hard for him to surpass. I mean, we know Vladdy's way up there. I don't really see him surpassing Olsen and Freeman anytime soon. And I much prefer Alonso. I think Alonso is highly underrated, honestly. I'd give the edge hit tool wise to Torque. I do think that Torque will hit for a better average than Pete Alonso does, but the power is easily Alonso. Like, I think Alonso will probably hit 10 plus more home runs. And, you know, we watched Torkelson multiple times out in the AFL. I love Torkelson. I have him borderline top 50 for Dynasty, but he's not, my opinion of him is not as high as it once was, I guess I'll say. He's a little smaller in person than you think, which is not a bad thing. I still think he's going to hit for power. He didn't hit for much power when we saw him, actually. I mean, he was going the other way a lot, and I think he was working on that. I think he was intentionally trying to work on going to opposite field, but he had a lot of singles. Yeah, he did get on base a lot. I mean, that was encouraging to see as well. But right now, I don't think he currently profiles as that type that's going to make the huge leap. But also, he's got the park factor going against him of Detroit being a pretty hard place to hit home runs. And yet, Torque's got the power, but he's going to be suppressed a little bit by that ballpark. And we saw it with Nick Castellanos where, you know, he left and the home runs really took off. Like, he was a huge double hitter in Detroit. And I think Torque's going to hit plenty of doubles, but does that suppress his home runs a little bit and, like, knock him down from, like, a 30 to 32 home run to, like, a 25, 27 home run? I think that that's a possibility when you play half your games there.
It's definitely a fair question. In fact, there's not a lot of great hitters parks. I think a lot of the AL Central is kind of neutral. I think Kansas City is neutral. I think Minnesota's
Kansas City's a terrible place to hit.
Actually. Yeah, maybe neutral is being a little high on that. But yeah, Cleveland is. Yeah, there's not a lot of great hitters parks in that division. So the fact that he'll get, you know, when you factor in all those parks, you'll get what, between 2/3 and 3/4 of his games in neutral to worse hitters parks. That definitely factors in. And like, yeah, you that's a great point with Castellanos, because who would you say has more raw power, Castellanos or Torque? They're probably pretty close.
Yeah, it's probably comparable, honestly. I mean, I think everyone listening is probably going to quick to assume it's Torkelson, but I really think Castellanos has really good power and is underrated. So I think it's close.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely a factor. It's definitely going to be a factor. So I kind of agree. I maybe am a little more optimistic on the power. I think he could still be a 30 home run guy, but I think Torque could be like a 35 home run guy at, you know, if he was in like a top 10 hitters park. But
sure.
Yeah, I think it definitely does hurt him a little bit and does keep him out. Plus, we'll have to see how the lineup looks around him. Obviously, he's Riley Green coming up with him. They just added Javi Baez. They just added Tucker. Tucker Barnhart isn't really a great gift, but the lineup is better. Scope's still there, so it could be a pretty decent lineup the next couple of years, especially once you add Torque and Green into it. But yeah, it's definitely got to wonder if he can get up to that next level. And I don't think he can. I think maybe he can get up to where like Matt Olson is, maybe. But do we think he's ever, and yeah, he'll probably pass Freeman at some point because of the age thing. But,
right.
But do we think he can ever get up to the level where Freeman is now, which is a top 20 guy? And I don't see that happening. No. With no speed, you got to be top 20 in Dynasty with no speed, you got to be 280 plus, 35 plus. And I don't think we see both of those. Maybe one of those things happens with Torque, but I don't think both of them. Moving down here a little bit, let's talk. There's a lot of interesting guys that are kind of like in this second tier of first base prospects. It's a big kind of glob of really a talented, some guys that are in AAA like Nick Prado. Then we get guys like Junkensi Noel, Miguel Vargas. So it's a very, very interesting tier of players. We'll start with Nick Prado, a guy that had, you know, pretty solid 2018, 2019. I mean, to 2017, 2018, and then dropped off a cliff in 2019. Like basically every top Kansas City hitting prospect did that year. 2019, and this is after a 280, 14 homer, 22 steal year in 2018. He dropped down to an atrocious 191, 278, 310 line in 2019 at High A Wilmington in the Carolina League. Then still had 17 steals, but 9 home runs in 124 games. The K rate was still super high back then, well over 30%. But 2021 bounced back in a big way. 265, 385, 602 slash line, had a 337 ISO, 28 doubles, 36 home runs, 98 RBI, 12 steals, and 545 plate appearances. So at this point, Chris, let's say you have Nick Prado. Are you buying what he did and kind of holding on to him, or are you using this opportunity to sell high?
I'm actually selling. I'm moving him down my rankings as we speak. I pulled up his contact rates and they're really bad. And
yeah.
I mean, in double A last year, he had a 63% contact rate, which is horrific. It didn't get much better in triple A. And that was a super friendly hitter environment as well, which is worth noting. But he had a 65.6% contact rate in triple A. So, you know, the power is going to play up because Omaha's a super hitter friendly park and that whole league is super hitter friendly. So the power was very inflated in my opinion. And I think I have him a little high. So Prado is actually going to bump down a hair. I have him a little too high in my opinion, currently at 37 overall. I'm bumping him outside the top 50 for prospects actually, because though that is highly concerning and AAA pitching was not good at all. So I think he could get exploited at the big league level a little bit. And it's also worth noting, like, where does he play? Because they have a log jam across the infield. So you already have Sal Perez. You've got MJ Melendez, who they've already said is going to play regularly somewhere. Like, they expect Melendez to be in the lineup somewhere next year. Then you have Vinny Pasquantino, who broke out and is a little older than Prado. You have Nick Prado. You currently have the log jam already in the infield of the current MLB guys. So, like, all these guys don't really fit, which also, I think, is a factor. Like, what do they do with them? And that's right. Really the tough thing. You have to look at that and evaluate that, too, because, Whit Merrifield's probably locked in at second base. But at shortstop, who are you going to play? I mean, you've got Nicky Lopez. You have Adalberto Mondesi. You have Bobby Witt Jr. I'm assuming Witt plays third base, but they still have enough guys. And right now they have Hunter Dozier penciled in at first base. I have no clue. Yeah. I really have no clue what to expect, but I mean, they've come out and said they plan for Melendez to be in the lineup next year. So with that, like, where does Pasquantino and Prado fit in? Where do these other regular guys fit in? So between that and the contact concerns, like, those contact numbers are highly concerning to me, actually, for a AAA league that wasn't great on pitching. The power numbers were inflated for a reason. It's because he played in a super power-friendly league and AAA pitching wasn't good. So, yeah, from that standpoint, I think he's worth a sell, personally.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with really any of that. I'm sure our good pal Chris Welsh is shaking his fist at you right now.
Yeah, probably.
He's probably like, oh, I'm never coming on Tool Shed again. No, we love you, Welsh, of course. But yeah, there definitely are a lot of concerns with Nick Prado. I think he could still be a 20 plus, maybe around 25 homer guy, adds in, you know, maybe 5 to 8 steals annually. But yeah, the hit tool is still a concern for me. Even even this year, when he was, you know, his breakout year, he still had a really high K rate, and for his career, it's over 30%. Still, he has 529 strikeouts in his minor league career over in 427 games. That's, if he's already striking out at a high clip now, like good, like you mentioned, he's going to get exploited by good pitching. So maybe he's only a 240 hitter. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 230, 240.
Yeah.
I think his ceiling for average is probably 260, and that might even be a tad generous. I think 240 is a good middle ground there for Prado. But I said, you know, he's still 25 home runs, 5 to 8 steals, slightly more valuable in OBP formats because of that higher walk rate, which was well over 10% last year, 83 walks in 124 games. So maybe be a little more valuable in OBP formats. But yeah, it's concerning that the K rate has really not gotten better. He started walking a bit more 2021 than he did previously. But yeah, the fact that the K, he's had over 150 strikeouts each of the last 3 years while playing 127, 124, and 124 games respectively. So that is a concern to me. So yeah, I am in agreement that I'd probably sell high on him if you can, especially if you're in a league with Chris Welsh. Chris Welsh can buy him from you.
Yeah.
He's the biggest Nick Prado guy out there.
Yeah. For what it's worth, I bumped him in between Dustin Harris and Curtis Meade. I think that's a pretty fair spot.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. There's a lot of prospects in that range. And we'll get into a couple more of those guys now. With someone that I felt it was when we throw a little debate in here. We've had some dynasty debates in previous episodes, which were a lot of fun. So I figured let's throw a quick one in here. Obviously, we don't have to go super in depth, but someone that you have higher, Yonkenzi Noel, someone that I have higher, Miguel Vargas. So I guess, Chris, make your case for Noel over Vargas in dynasty rankings.
Yeah. And so Vargas gets the edge from the standpoint of proximity. I think that obviously we see him sooner than later. We could definitely see him next year, but that's not the case with Noel, though I do think that Noel is the better hitter and the better power hitter as well. We did see the power come out for Miguel Vargas this year. I think that was the biggest thing that really vaulted him up. Like, Vargas has always been a good hitter, then the power really came to life this year. I think people still really underrate Noel's hit tool and his ability to make solid contact. I mean, we saw it. He hit 393 in low A, which, you know, whatever, it was 162 plate appearances. Even the 280 at high, it was still really good. His contact numbers were good across the board. Things you like to see. He's a massive dude that's going to hit for more power than Vargas, in my opinion. And I think the averages could be pretty comparable. And also, you have to factor in the standpoint of the Dodgers. Like, the Dodgers are constantly going to buy people, and like, where does he actually fit in? So that's my biggest question there as well. I mentioned Noel had an 82% contact rate in low A, which is really, really good. That obviously dropped down a little bit in high, as we saw with the average, but still 70%. So solid numbers there. So I'm actually pretty on board with this. And I think that Noel's a really solid hitter, good power. You see him, and he really resembles like Eloy in a way, like the way he stands, the way he swings, like. So there's a lot to like in the profile here. I still think that he's being highly undervalued. I think you can still get him pretty cheap. But at the end of the day, I have both these very close. Like, in overall, they're only a couple spots apart. So I do like both these guys a lot. But I am a fan of Noel. Some of it goes back to the fact that on this episode a year ago, I called Noel a breakout, and that's what happened. So, like, I've kind of been all over that one. So I love Noel from that standpoint, but I do also think that he's just a really solid player that we still haven't seen his best, but also like Vargas a lot as well. So both very close.
Yeah, both are very close for me as well. And I love Yonkenzi Noel as well. Maybe not quite as much as you, but he's still with right around 50 overall for me. The reason why I'm a little higher on Vargas, and you kind of hit some of these points too, but Vargas is just a hitter. Like, every year of his career, in professional baseball, 2018 in 53 games, hit 330. 2019, 124 games, hit 308. And yeah, that was before the power came out. You only had 9 combined home runs in 177 games before 2020. But you kind of started seeing the kind of the hints there, like the little tea leaves that the power was coming. So he had 38 doubles in 124 games in 2019. So started hinting at it. You know, and the slugging was still pretty good each of those years. ISO went up a little bit in the second year, but that kind of finally took off in this third year in 2021. 27 doubles, 23 home runs, 120 games between high A and double A. And the power was really good. The power was even better in double A. He had 16 home runs in 83 games there with 16 doubles as well. I think I would still give the power edge to Noel. I think Noel is a 30 homer bat. Miguel Vargas probably more like 25. So definitely give the edge to Noel there. But I think that Vargas is going to hit for a higher average. I think this is a plus hit tool guy. Solid enough walk rate, little under right around 9% for his career. Last year was about right around 8%. So I think there will definitely be a little bit of an edge there. I think Noel is more like a 270 guy. I think Vargas would be like 280, 290, honestly. And I do, well, you made a great point about how it's Dodgers and they always buy players, but I actually think that this kind of like Vargas's timeline and Justin Turner's timeline actually kind of coincide very well, where this could work out perfectly. This could be the perfect storm of, you know, prospect coming up when the kind of incumbent kind of goes out the door or retires or whatever Turner decides to do. But I think it could be a case where Turner does one more year with the Dodgers and then boom, it's Miguel Vargas at third base. And that's definitely a possibility. And maybe, you know, if Muncy is as long-term issue here and they keep Bellinger in outfield, first base could be an opportunity as well for Vargas. So I think if you look at hit and power, it almost evens out for me. Then the fact that Vargas can also add a little bit of speed, maybe be a 5-8 steal guy at the major league level. He has will be in a better lineup with the Dodgers than Noel will be with Cleveland. So that's what gives me the edge. But I think we're both in agreement that we both like both these guys quite a bit, and it's very close overall. But those are our cases for Noel and for Miguel Vargas, two guys that are everyone should be targeting in your dynasty leagues for sure. Two more guys a little further down in our top 10s here. Actually, you don't have Pasquantino in our top 10, but they're both these guys are kind of right around back end top 10 guys, the top 100 overall guys. Are we believing in the breakouts from Vinny Pasquantino and Juan Yepez? You know, the short answer for me, yes, I'm believing in both these guys. Yeah, but Pasquantino, as I mentioned in my article, like he did everything you could want from a, you know, a top first base prospect. Like he hit for high average. He had a high walk rate. He actually had as many walks as strikeouts last year with 64. He hit for power. Maybe he's not a huge power guy, but I think he could be a 20 to 25 homer guy with a high average and a high OBP as well. So I'm buying in on him. And you and I both saw Juan Yepez out in the Arizona Fall League. And yeah, he's a dude. Like this guy's a hit for a solid average, good pop. Again, I don't think he stands out in either department, but 286, 386, 5. Did he really hit 286, 386, 586? Wow. a lot of 86s there with 29 doubles, 27 home runs, high walk rate, decent K rate. Like, I'm buying in both these guys. Like, these guys are dudes, and I think they could fly even higher in 2021. But what are your thoughts on these two, Chris?
Yeah, I'm actually a little low on Pasquantino, I think. I'm going to bump him up ahead of Yepez, actually, because I think the contact skills are a lot better. Was just agreed. Looking at some numbers. And another thing, people talk, like, I've read that there's people in the organization that prefer Pasquantino to Nick Prado.
I think that too.
There's reasonable, like, there's a reason for that. I mean, the dude performed, and he didn't have his numbers elevated by a inflated AAA hitting-friendly environment like Prado did. I mean, this dude dominated high A and double A. He had an 87% contact rate in double A, which is really, really good. I'm buying in there. I actually think, while I like Yepez, I think it's a good time to sell him personally, because I think there's a ton of hype around him. And I think, here's why I think his value is at peak, because he doesn't have a spot. I think that he probably is on the big league roster this year, but I think because he doesn't get the adequate playing time, that his dynasty value is going to tank and people just aren't going to talk about him. I think the breakout's 100% real. Like what we saw is really, really good. And we saw him, like, he has the ability to hit tall fields. He has massive power. He has good contact skills. We saw that live, and I'm a big fan of that. But I just think because of his context, unless he gets traded, I think he's a sell because if you have him right now, there's a lot of hype around him. You can cash out and get something good. But if this time next year he spent a year on the major league roster and been on the bench, then his value is going to be minimal and he's not going to be playing right now over Goldie or Nolan Arenado. Maybe a DH helps him, but
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. Like there's no room in that lineup because Gorman's going to come in too, most likely. You still have all those mouths to feed in the outfield. Tommy Edman still needs a spot. They're likely to sign a shortstop. There's no spot for him, in my opinion. So that's why I think he's a prime sell candidate, because I think that his value is going to only go down. So I think you can get a lot for him. There's been a lot of hype around him. So I would sell him from that standpoint.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I definitely believe Yepez is for real, but he definitely needs the DH to come in, because without the DH, it's kind of like Seth Beer. Like without the DH, I don't know where Beer or Yepez fit into their long-term, their team's long-term plans here with all the mouths they have to feed already, especially in St. Louis. Like, and you're not going to upset any of that outfield because, you know, they, like, what is it, 5 gold gloves in that lineup? So, yeah. Just in that aspect, like those guys are going to stay in the lineup because of their defense.
Right. The outfield's not changing with O'Neill, Carlson, and Bader. You have Edman. So if Gorman comes in, where does Edman play? Does Edman bump to shortstop? Like if Gorman's at second? I mean, Goldie and Arenado aren't going anywhere, and they're locked up for the foreseeable future. So there's nowhere to go, like, unless there's a DH. But I think he's just on the bench, honestly. And there's so many mouths to – like. Who, there's so many other guys that could fill a role in the DH too. And, you know, some of these names you may laugh at, like Paul DeJong or Brendan Donovan or Lars Nootbaar, but there's a chance that all these guys could get time at the DH role, in my opinion. So
Lars Nootbaar.
Yeah. There's no room. That's just the thing. And I think that for that reason, I think he's a sell because I think his value is going to go down over the next year and you're not going to be able to get as much for him.
All right, let's move into the next segment of our rankings. So let's go 11 through 25 for our first base prospect rankings. For me, 11, Seth Beer. 12 through 15, Michael Taglia, Anthony Garcia, who I love. The dude's a beast. Get Anthony Garcia right now. Jonathan Aranda and Alex Benelis at 15. 16 through 20, Aaron Sabato, Daniel Montesino, Bryce Ball, Mason Martin, Elijeris Montero. And 21 through 25, Sherton Apostle, Blaine Krim, Junior Caminero, Kyle Manzardo, and Jordan Viers. And just because I like Nico Cavadas and he's next, Nico Cavadas is 26. Chris, who's your 11 to 25?
Yep. So it's changed a little bit now that I moved Pasquantino up, but he was 11th, then followed by Aaron Sabato, Michael Taglia, Anthony Garcia, Seth Beer, Alec Burleson, Blaine Krim, Kalei Rosario, Kyle Manzardo, Mason Martin at 20, and then the final five being Bryce Ball, Alex Benelis, Junior Caminero, Spencer Horwitz, and Tyreek Reed rounding out the 25th spot.
So it does fall off. There's still some intriguing names in here for sure. Like I mentioned, Garcia, I think we both like Jonathan Aranda. You had him top 10. I liked Alex Benelis, especially now he came over to the Red Sox. I think that's a good fit for him. I don't know where he plays long term, but he's an intriguing bat. He had a really, really good debut after the draft this year. Some of the young guys that are a little further down, like Blaine Krim's intriguing, Junior Caminero, Kyle Manzardo, Jordan Viers. So, yes, definitely some intriguing guys for deeper dynasty leagues for sure. But it's not a lot as much star power in this part of the rankings as we had for catcher. But let's go into a couple of our talking points here. First off, I guess I have him at 10 overall. Where did you have Blaze Jordan, Chris?
He's in the top 10. He was number 8.
Okay, so we both have – maybe we should have talked about him in the last segment, but we'll talk about him now. Do you think Blaze Jordan can vault it up into, let's say, the top 50 prospects in 2022?
That's – it's so tough to say for sure. I don't know. I mean, we saw him, like, blasting off really quick – and then he kind of slowed down a little bit. And I think contact's always been the biggest concern, but his contact numbers were actually really good. And yeah, it was a small sample, but rookie ball had a 81% contact rate. And even when he dropped down, we saw him only hit 250 in low A, but he still had a 78% contact rate, which was good. Small sample, I know, but Maybe. I mean, we know the power's there. We know the potential's there. Like, he's this wonder kid that hit like a 500-foot home run when he was 13, as the old folktale says.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
No, that's ridiculous. I'm just thinking about being in a little league and hitting one. Like, the fence is 200 feet. That means you hit it 300 feet past the fence. Like, that's just nuts, man.
I could maybe buy into 400.
Yeah.
But 500?
500, yeah.
I remember my little league, there was two little league fields in my hometown, and one of them was near, if anyone knows L.L. Bean, which is, you know, they make outdoor gear and boots and stuff like that. They had their office building kind of like behind left center field. So you would have to like put it halfway into the building to hit 500 feet there. Yeah, that's just, when you think about it, like you mentioned, 200-foot fences. Yeah, there's no way you're hitting it. That'd be two and a half whole fields. Like, right. That's ridiculous. I don't buy that.
That's a football field and a half. Like, that's a long way. I don't know. But with that being said, I think that what we saw from him was really, really good. And it was better than what we expected. I'm hoping that I'll get some serious looks at him in Greenville next year. And I think that Greenville team could be a lot of fun with some serious talent. After this year, it sucked. So I'm hoping to get some good players. I hope York will be there for a little bit, get some Blaze, maybe get some Marcelo Meyer. That would be awesome.
Yeah, should be intriguing at the lower levels for Boston, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, certainly getting better. Blaze is probably coming into a really big year for him over a full season. We'll see. We'll see what he's made of definitely this year. But if the hit tool is even average, in my opinion, then he's going to be really good, and I think he can really vault up. So it's not out of the realm of possibility when you see those contact numbers, think that he could be above average hitter if that sustains. But we know the power's easily plus. There's no question about that. So, yes, I would say there is a chance that he could vault up, but a lot is going to hinge on the contact.
Agreed. I'd say a 20% chance he gets there. I don't know. I don't think the contact will be there enough for him to kind of get up into the range where like Junkanzi Noel and Miguel Vargas and all these guys are now. I just don't see him making enough contact to be that type of guy. But yeah, and more I think about it too. So we're saying that he has the same type of power as like Sammy Sosa in the home run derbies back in the early 2000s and like Stanton and Gallo and Judge now. Like, come on. When you're 13? No. Okay. I 100% don't believe that now. But sorry to go back on that topic, but I just don't see it. If I had to bet money, I would bet on no, but definitely think there's a possibility. Like I said, about 20% chance I'd put at him being top 50 next year. Moving a little bit further down here, a couple bigger names from 2020, pre-2021 that had kind of down years, Michael Taglia, Aaron Sabato. I think I know the answer to this already, Chris, based off your rankings. But are you still in on these two? And I guess, which one are you more in on after their down performances this past year?
A little bit more Taglia. Maybe it's because we saw him in the AFL. He has a really smooth swing, and I think that he's capable of making a decent contact. And when he hits the when he gets on the ball, I mean, he mashes. Like,
yeah, he had a couple of tanks while we were out
power,
there.
Yeah, like 40-degree launch angle tanks at that. Like, those things went high and far. So he's got plenty of raw power. The contact, I guess, is the biggest question mark with him. Sabato, I actually do think we'll see rebound. He finished the season pretty strong. And so I think he's one that could really take a step forward. And he was so good in college. Like, his numbers from college were just unreal. So I'm kind of, you know, putting this behind him. I'm giving him a pass on this year, even though it was really bad overall. But I think that we'll see Sabato take a step forward next year. So I'm going to stick with saying that both these guys could take a step forward, but I believe Sabato taking a bigger step.
I'll probably lean a little more towards Taglia. I agree. I both think that they will bounce back. You know, Sabato had a terrible year, 202 average overall, but did hit 253 in high A in just 22 games, but really struggled in low A Fort Myers. And yeah, I've always been a Sabato guy just because he went to North Carolina. I'm a North Carolina Tar Heel fan through and through, especially basketball and baseball. I don't watch college football, but for basketball and baseball, I'm a North Carolina Tar Heel fan. So definitely been a guy that I've, you know, liked for several, even back during his days at North Carolina. He was a nice bat in that lineup. Essentially, his 2 years there, he did very well. even though 2020 was shortened, but he still had seven home runs in 19 games that year. I just wonder if the context skills are there long term. I have that same concern with Talia, but not to the same degree. I think power wise, they're pretty similar overall. I think Sabato will have, you know, a bigger impact in OBP leagues than he does in average leagues. But I just wonder if he's ever more than like a 230 to 240 hitter at the major league level with like 25 home runs or so. I think Talia can hit a little bit higher average. And he still, even though he only hit 228 last year, still had a walk rate well above 10%, kept his OBP reasonable at 333, had 22 home runs and 10 steals. I wouldn't, you know, factor in those 10 steals at all. Seven of those came in high A, but maybe he can add a little bit of speed, at least a handful a year, more than Sabato. Sabato's not going to run at all. He's a big dude, six two, 230, first base DH only profile, doesn't run at all. He's attempted the two steals in the last 3 years combined, so don't expect any of that. So I think Talia has a little bit of an advantage there, so I will go Talia over Sabato, but I do agree that both are solid kind of buys right now in Dynasty after their subpar 2021 seasons for sure. Let's end our show here, Chris, with a breakout prospect each, a guy that's currently outside of our top 250 that we think could bump up into the top 100 in the very near future. Chris, who is that guy for you?
I'm going with Kalei Rosario. And yeah, I looked up that pronunciation to make sure it was right, because that's a name that we were talking about before trying to figure it out. So we looked it up. It's Kalei Rosario. He's just got some massive power. I don't think we've even seen the best of him yet. He was a fifth round pick in the 2020 draft to the Twins out of Hawaii. We saw him in rookie ball, obviously not a huge sample last year, just 208 plate appearances, but he hit 277, hit five home runs. He stole four bases, which I don't really see being a part of his game moving forward, but the power's every bit legit. I think he's a good OBP factor, and he's going to hit for solid average. So I think he's a really good field to hit plus power. I could really see him taking the next step. So Kalei Rosario will be my pick here for the breakout. We'll see if I can hit on it like I did with John Kenzie Noel last year. We'll see if the first base sticks and Kalei Rosario breaks out next year.
There you go. Got to go back to back there with those picks. I like Kalei Rosario a good amount as well. My pick is a guy that I currently have ranked 271 overall, and a guy that actually was surprised played as much first base as he did. I thought he was played mostly outfield, but he actually played more first base than outfield, 32 games in at first and 22 in the outfield. And that is Daniel Montesino of the San Diego Padres, one of their bigger free agent signings last year, and really solid debut down in the Dominican Summer League in 56 games. / 316, 444, 489, 43 walks to 53 strikeouts, added in 21 extra base hits, four home runs, and eight steals. He's a guy that I think is going to be really good in both the hit tool and power department. He's already flashed plus raw power, has some production left on his frame. Still only 17 years old, so he won't be 18 until the middle of February. I think he can add a bit more bulk, maybe be a, you know, 20 to 25 homer guy down the road with a solid hit tool, not a speedster, but solid enough speed where I think he could be an average runner in the long term. So maybe we're looking at 55 hit, 55 power, 50 speed type of guy. And he's already shown a pretty solid approach as well. His ability to walk that much at such a young age is really intriguing to me. Kept the K rate in check as well. I think he won't stand out in any one area. I think there's definitely a chance he's 55 hit, 50 power with a little bit of speed mixed in. Whether he stays at first base long term or moves to the outfield, that's still kind of to be determined. But for now, he qualifies at first, and I will pick him as my breakout that could be top 100 by this time next year. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this week. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. And check out all of our written work at FantraxHQ.com or over on our Patreon. Join us again on Thursday as we get into the second base position. But until then, everyone take care.
Want to create a breakthrough gene therapy or life-saving vaccine? Pioneer aerospace excellence? Take your hospitality tech brand international? Montgomery County, Maryland is where you can do all that and more. Use our ideal location next to DC, diverse world-class talent, and our vast business resources to be the next company to make your mark and transform the world. Visit bnext.thinkmoco.com. That's bnext.thinkmoco.com to learn how we can help you create something remarkable.